5th. The time now is 3 o'clock, and you're listening to a Juno Afternoon on KTOO for Tuesday, September 3rd. I'm your host, Lisa Fu. We'll talk with Jetta Whitaker from the Bartlett Regional Hospital Foundation about Saturday's Seafood Gala. Then we'll hear from divas Callie Connerton and Lori Daniels, joined by Rosie Humphreys. Sharon Loba and Dan Hobson will be here to talk about First Friday at the Jack. Scott Jensen will offer an update on the Juno Youth Football League. And Principal Brenda Edwards and Instructional Support Teacher Amy Ballard will talk about student success. That, music, and more all on today's Juno Afternoon. First is National Native News. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Oklahoma's highest court has ruled a little girl in the middle of a two-state custody battle can stay with her father for now. KGOU's Kirk Gortney has the latest update on the ongoing case.
The Oklahoma Supreme Court has granted an emergency stay to keep 3-year-old Veronica with her biological father, Dustin Brown, at least for now. A docket for the state Supreme Court shows the stay came after a lower court's ruling Friday that Veronica should be transferred immediately to Matt and Melanie Capobianco. Veronica's birth mother put her up for adoption. Brown has pursued custody under the federal Indian Child Welfare Act. The U.S. Supreme Court ruled that law, intended to keep Native American children with tribal families, did not apply in this case. The Cherokee Nation has been supporting Brown and providing an attorney to represent Veronica's best interests. Brown and the Capobiancos were in a Nowata County court on Friday. Following that hearing, attorneys for Brown filed a writ of prohibition in the Oklahoma Supreme Court. Neither side is able to comment on the case due to a gag order. For National Native News, I'm Kurt Gortney in Oklahoma City.
The Labor Day weekend began with several powerful storms across South Dakota. The Pine Ridge Reservation suffered damage from a possible tornado. South Dakota Public Broadcasting's Gary Ellenbolt reports.
Friday night's storm followed one of the hottest weeks in South Dakota history. Temperatures routinely hit the upper 90s to above 100 degrees in parts of the state. On southwest South Dakota's Pine Ridge Reservation, two homes were reported destroyed, with several more homes damaged. Officials with the Red Cross say they worked to find shelter for nearly 24 tribal residents displaced by the bad weather. No injuries were reported. The severe storm was another in a series of devastating weather events this year. Three homes were destroyed by a tornado in the reservation community of Allen in late May. For National Native News, I'm Gary Ellenbolt.
The Sioux Valley Dakota Nation signs agreements to attain self-governance. Leaders from the First Nation, the Canadian government, and the Manitoba government signed agreements last week to remove the nation from portions of the Indian Act. It will provide the nation greater control over decision-making on things like economic development, land management, education, and other issues. The parties have negotiated on the agreements for more than 20 years. The First Nation is the first in Manitoba to make a self-government agreement. The next step is provincial and federal legislation to bring the agreements into effect. Sioux Valley Dakota Nation has nearly 2,500 members, with about 56% living on reserve. The governor of Alaska has declared an economic disaster for residents of St. Lawrence Island. According to the Associated Press, Sean Parnell recently made the declaration because of a historically low walrus harvest. Parnell says 340 walrus were taken during the spring harvest, which is 36% of the average for the last 10 years. The harvest is causing a significant economic challenge to local residents. Walrus are a subsistence food source, and their ivory is used for carving, a significant regional economic driver, says Parnell. No emergency funds are available for immediate access, but the legislature could appropriate money for assistance. Native golfer Nota Begay's foundation, NB3, has announced a new national initiative to combat childhood obesity and type 2 diabetes among Native children. The plan includes expanding research and advocacy initiatives and assisting tribal communities in developing health and wellness programs, all with the help from a more than $1 million grant. The new initiative will focus on the Southwest, Upper Midwest, and Southern Plains regions. We'll be right back. During this month in 2011, a healing totem pole began a journey from Washington State to Maryland. It was carved with stories of healing, hope, and knowledge, and stopped in tribal communities along the way. The totem pole was created by a Lummi carver and commissioned for an exhibit at the Library of Medicine. The exhibit examined concepts of health and medicine among Native people. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation, and by the law firm of Sanosky, Chambers, Saxe, Miller & Munson, advocating Native American interests throughout the United States, with offices in New Mexico, California, Alaska, and Washington, D.C. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon. I'm Lisa Fu, and right now we have Jetta Whitaker and Cece Brenner in the studio to talk about the Seafood Gala and fundraiser going on this weekend. Welcome, Jetta and Cece.
Thank you for having us.
Okay, so, Jetta, you're here with the foundation.
Correct.
The Bartlett Regional Hospital Foundation. And Cece, you are a nurse.
Correct.
Okay, so let's hear about this seafood gala that's going on.
We have a terrific event planned, and I'm excited and sort of sorry to say it's sold out. So if you have tickets, it's a don't-miss event. And if you don't have tickets yet, you can call our office and get on the waiting list. But I'm not sure that any tickets will appear. So we're using this opportunity both to remind people of what is coming and to encourage people to get their tickets next year, nice and early, and also then to talk about the need for the SANE training, which is what the event is fundraising for.
Wow, that's pretty amazing to sell out.
It is, a week in advance. Juno people don't buy their tickets early, in my experience. So, but only 200 tickets are sold because it's a very exclusive, you know, space-limited event on top of the tram in the Timberline restaurant.
Okay, so we'll go over the details just to remind folks maybe a little later. Let's talk about what this fundraiser is for.
Well, this fundraiser is for the nurses to become trained to do sexual assaults here in our community. Sexual assault is a topic, obviously, none of us want to talk about, but it's happening right here in our community. There was a survey done in 2011 that showed that 35 out of 100 women in the city borough of Juneau have experienced sexual assault. So there's a definite need for training for the nurses to be forensic nurses and do evidence collection and help these victims of these violent crimes and help the district attorneys prosecute these cases. So just really helping us fill the need between criminal justice and the healthcare system and helping our community.
Have nurses in Juneau received this training before?
Not this specific training. We've done forensic evidence collection training, but we're not necessarily certified in this specialty. And so us nurses just want to step forward and get trained. These kits are very extensive. The evidence collection can take, a victim can be in the emergency room anywhere from 6 to 14, sometimes even 19 hours getting this done. And we just really want to improve that system for the victims. It's very traumatic for them to go through, and so we just want to ease that a little bit.
Who gives the training?
Well, in this situation, we're going to do 24 hours of online training, and then a nurse will fly from Anchorage to fill the remainder of the 16 hours. Then we'll have to do some clinicals in town and sit for a national exam.
Okay, so all the nurses will fly to Anchorage, or you said just one?
No, just one nurse will fly from Anchorage to do the training for the nurses locally. So
okay.
We'll do it here in Juneau.
Got it, okay. And will all the nurses be part of this training?
No, we're not going to train all of the nurses, and that is just because of competency. If we have every single nurse trained, we don't have... At this time, we don't have enough reported crimes to actually keep everybody competent, so we're going to try and get up to 15 nurses trained in our community.
That's great.
Yeah.
And how long will the training take, you think?
Well, the course is 40 hours, and then the clinical hours will, there's no specific amount. We'll just have to get signed off on competency, so I don't know, 80 hours maybe.
And when will it start?
Well, assuming we raise the money this weekend, we're hopeful that everyone will be trained by the end of this calendar year, so by the end of December. And then we'll start the new year with fully trained staff there.
How much needs to be raised?
The ballpark is $40,000 to cover 15 nurses in roughly 80 hours of paid experience time, and flying the trainer in and then paying for the certification test. $40,000, if we don't have 15 nurses who want to take this on this year, we will save some of that money and fund another training in another year as people, you know, become more interested in being a SANE certified nurse.
Okay. Is this an acronym, SANE?
Yeah, that stands for Sexual Assault Nurse Examiner.
Okay. So are nurses the first point of contact for people who come into the hospital victims of abuse?
Not always. Juneau Police Department usually contacts the victim and brings them in, but they can just come in and see the nurse first.
Okay. And so you said that some of the nurses have an initial amount of training.
Yeah, we've had... The hospital's paid for a nurse to come from Anchorage and do like an 8-hour class on how to collect the evidence.
Okay.
So that's about the only. Right now, we had a class in 2006, but as you can imagine, with staff turnover and forensics changing, we're kind of out of date in that situation. So.
And there is obviously a need.
Yes.
For this.
There's a great need.
Has there been something that's initiated the need more than other years?
I think just healthcare is changing, and the stress of these exams in the emergency room is changing the nurse's attitude on what we need to do to provide better care to our victims and our community. It's getting more difficult for nurses to feel confident and comfortable doing these exams just because there's so many things that are changing with the forensics.
Do you have an example of what is changing or what has changed?
Well, Juneau Empire's published it quite well this last month, but we've had 4 or 5 cases in the emergency room in just this month. And so that's added stress to our cruise ship passengers coming into the emergency room and our ever-aging population in Juneau. The need in the emergency room is just, it's very stressful in there for the victims, so, and stressful for the nurses.
Okay.
And currently, when there are 3 emergency nurses on staff and a domestic violence victim appears, one nurse gets sucked off to deal with that person for up to 8 hours, or you know, more than a shift worth. So this will create sort of an on-call roster of people who are willing to come in and just be support for that domestic violence victim.
Mm-hmm. And just to be clear, so is this domestic violence or is it sexual assault or is it both?
Sexual assault nurse examiner is more of a forensic nurse, and she can deal with domestic violence victims, sexual assault victims, gunshot wounds, stabbing victims, any kind of violent crime, and where there would be possibility of police intervention and forensic evidence needs. So she would be able to help those victims.
Okay. So this isn't necessarily just for Juneau residents, but visitors of Juneau as well. There's
Absolutely.
Been a growing need.
There's a growing need. And Southeast, all along the Southeast coast, there's not really anybody that does forensic exams and support these victims. Sometimes it can be just a state trooper that does a forensic exam in our outlying communities. And the victims' needs aren't really being met by just having somebody go in there and collect evidence and, okay, we'll do our best kind of thing. So there's a whole process in this. And we do have a local sexual assault response team here in town. And that is myself and JPD AWARE. We have a state trooper on board and the district attorney's office. And we're all working really closely to improve the entire process for sexual assault and domestic violence victims.
Okay. So. Let's go over the details of the fundraiser for folks who do have tickets, those lucky people. It's this Saturday.
It's atop the tram, starts at 6, and the price of the ticket includes the tram ride, so people who are lucky enough to have tickets will just need to show their Vendini ticket and then have access up to the top of the tram, where we will enjoy a delicious dinner prepared by celebrity chef Jesse Zifkool from California. Our sponsor, our main sponsor, is Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, and they very generously donated all the seafood and paying for the guest chef to come up. So it's just going to be an exquisite meal, and she will work hand-in-hand with Mark Collier and the tram staff to prepare this meal, featuring herb and flour-encrusted black cod. I know, it just sounds wonderful. And a bunch of other wonderful appetizers and salads. And then we will have a dessert auction, a silent auction and an outcry auction. With Juno, this community is so generous in donating things for such a good cause that I think we have about 60 auction items altogether of everything, you know, small things up to humongous things. Bring your checkbooks, because the biggest thing is a luxury cruise for two on the Sea of Cortez with a retail value of $6,500. So we're really hoping then that goes for full value. We are going to have a professional auctioneer named Charles Crochet. He's the father of one of the ER nurses, and he's agreed to come up. He's a cattle auctioneer, so we're going to have that pattern going, and he will partner up with Sharon Burns, a local celebrity. Lots of auction items, and hopefully we'll be down the tram by 10:30 or 11.
Wow, that sounds like a really great event, the Seafood Gala and Fundraiser, Saturday evening, 6 p.m. It's raising money for a great cause. All proceeds benefit sexual assault exam certification for Bartlett Regional Hospital's emergency room nurses. Thank you so much, Jetta and Cece, for being here today and talking about this great fundraiser, and sounds like a delicious dinner.
Yes, thank you for having us.
To a Juno Afternoon on KTOO. I'm your host, Lisa Fu, and right now we have Kelly Connerton, Lori Daniels, and Rosie Humphreys in the studio with us. Welcome, ladies.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And two of you guys are divas.
Yes. Yes.
Before we go into that specifically, we have Rosie with the Juno Lyric Opera, and Kelly and Lori are doing something to fundraise for the Juno Lyric Opera.
Correct. So the Juno Lyric Opera is a nonprofit organization here in Juno who is meant, our role is to really bring arts and music to the community in the Southeast. And so this is our annual fundraiser. It's our third. We started a few years ago with Francis Leach. We brought it from Ketchikan. It helps to raise funds. It's just a really fun night. You get a vote for your diva, and those votes turn into dollars, and the diva who earns the most votes is crown diva for the year.
Oh, okay. So this is an annual thing that you guys do.
It's gonna, yeah, it's our third annual Who's Your Diva event.
Okay, so Kelly and Lori, what makes you guys divas?
Great.
Who wants to start? Who wants to start?
Well,
this
I guess
Kelly.
Yes. Hi, I'm Kelly. I guess, you know, being a diva, I've been born and raised here, and I've been into the musical scene and the art scene. My dad is Jeff Brown here at KTU, and so I've been extremely blessed with that. And I've been always known as, you know, his little baby girl and his little diva princess, you know, totting around in high heels and whatnot. And I also work at Shoofly, so, you know, always in heels and a party dress. So I guess I've been always known as a little princess around town when I was growing up. So I guess that qualifies me as a diva. So
Okay.
Well, I don't know what makes me a diva. Not much into high heels, but you know,
there are other ways to be
accidental diva. Just kind of into music and singing. I just love to sing.
Lori was in Hairspray last November. A lot of your listeners might know her as Motormouth from Hairspray, where she did a phenomenal job. So that was a big diva moment for her.
Yes.
Okay, so will each of you be performing?
Yes.
Yes, we will.
Okay. Can you talk about that, or is it giving? Is that a secret? Okay.
Well, we all of the divas perform a song at the beginning, and then we each have a piece with either piano or, personally, I have a guitar as like, and then we also have a song that we perform with a band.
Okay.
And so we perform two songs, like our own separate songs, and then we perform all one together. And so you can see a little bit of, you know, the divas' taste and, you know, how they act and their outfits, their, you know, their diva moves, their soul, their rhythm. Mm-hmm. So it's really, it's going to be fun.
So can you give a preview of what you'll be singing?
Or you don't want to sing? I'm going to be singing Landslide by Stevie Nicks, as well as I'm going to be singing Red High Heels by Kelly Pickler. So I, you know, grew up with the Folk Fest, so I love, and, you know, I grew up with Fleetwood Mac, so, and the Bengals and all that stuff. So I'm going to, you know, be singing that, which I grew up with. And then I also have become really into country. Mm-hmm. And, of course, Red High Heels, you know, Where Can't You Fly? That sort of ties in right there.
Nice. How about you, Lori?
Well, I'm going to be doing a song by Bonnie Raitt. It's kind of more bluesy, and it's just a style that I enjoy. And one, my other song is a show tune, which I enjoy doing show tunes. So,
yeah,
and I just look forward to doing it.
And then there, you said there was going to be a group song as well with all the divas.
Yes.
It's called Hard to Be a Diva.
Opening act.
Opening act. You'll have all nine divas on stage. They all have their own part. It's choreographed maybe just a little bit with Mike Moss playing piano. And that's going to be the big opening number. The first act is a little bit slower tempo depending on the songs that were chosen. So they're either acoustic, really accompaniment either with the piano that I'll be playing or like Kelly was saying, they have their own accompaniment with guitar.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So you, all the divas have been practicing together, I presume?
For the
main song?
Song. Yeah, for the first one.
Yeah. How long have you guys been preparing for that?
You got your first music notes from Franny months ago.
Yeah.
And then we had a rehearsal last Wednesday.
Yeah.
Well, I've been preparing, you know, my diva song since, you know, the first thing when I was like, Franny, I'm going to be in the divas. I'm going to be in the divas. You're just going to have to deal with it.
So.
As a group, though, you guys have had one rehearsal as a group.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Just with that one number.
Yeah, because I assume that maybe divas don't like to share the stage.
Or microphones, for that matter.
You'll be seeing a lot of that on Saturday.
So, yeah, so that working together, though. But I'm sure you guys also get along, though, right?
Oh, yeah.
Sometimes. We do. There, you know, there's an amazing group of divas this year, and you know, they're all fabulous, talented performers. So it's really great to be working with everyone.
Two of them I sing with the Pride Chorus, so we've been singing together for years. So,
and have you each been a diva before in the competition?
No,
I have not. No.
Okay.
And just for the listeners, it's not. The competition definitely is there. It's all in the spirit
of course,
fundraising for JLO. So all of these women are divas. We want to make sure that that's out there, too.
Right. That's true as well.
But there is a crown. There is a crown at the end of the night
for the
winning diva.
What does a crown look like?
I think it's actually rhinestones, and it actually says diva on it. So
where do you guys practice your individual songs? Just at home, or do you have an audience that, you know, you call it your best friends, they listen to me sing?
Well, my kids listen to me sing.
Okay.
They have no choice. But, yeah, I practice mostly at home, and we've been doing some music with the band and with Rosie, so, you know, but Kelly. Sorry. I've been practicing since, I think, May, you know, several different songs, and finally came down to these two songs and just been singing them over and over and over.
Great.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just, I nanny for three kids, and so every once in a while I'm like, okay, you're going to have to listen to this. This is what I'm going to be singing. So they're like, okay. But, yeah, no, and friends, and, of course, you know, my mom and dad, you know, I'm like, okay, we have to turn off K2 for just a minute. So sorry, because it's always on in my house, obviously. But.
Well, so it seems like these are going to be very polished performances. You guys have been performing for a really long time, several months.
Yeah.
So when is the Diva competition?
It is Saturday, this Saturday the 7th at 7 p.m. Tickets are sold out. So it's been sold out since last week. We've had it in the Centennial Hall years previous, but we're unable to get that venue for this year, so we're at the Jack. So it's a much smaller, more intimate venue, still going to be great. It's going to be catered by Abby's Catering. Some of our other sponsors are Shauna O'Sullivan Studio, as well as Agape Salon, who did makeovers in the photo shoot.
Oh, fun.
So, yeah.
But we are still accepting votes online.
Definitely. Good idea. Thank you, Kelly. And this is important to know. We're accepting votes online. You can vote for each diva on our website. But the votes for Vendini will be shut off starting at 12 o'clock on Saturday so that we can kind of tally the votes and then give a starting number. So if you want to vote for your divas, get it in by Saturday, 12 p.m. noon, online for Vendini votes.
Great. So even if you're not, you don't have a ticket because it is sold out, you can still vote
online.
Please,
yes, definitely.
For your favorite
diva. Totally welcome to vote for me.
Yeah. And that's on our website at junoopera.org.
Thank you. Thank you, Callie, Lori, and Rosie for coming in today. It was great talking about it. And like Rosie said, you guys are all divas. So good luck to all of you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon on KTOO. I'm Lisa Fu, your host, and right now we have Sharon Loba and Dan Hobson in the studio with us. So welcome, Sharon and Dan.
Thank you.
Hi.
And we're here to talk about First Friday at the Jack.
Mm-hmm.
So, Sharon, you'll be having an art exhibit there.
Right. It's all called Mount Juno.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So can you tell us about it?
Right. Well, for years we've been painting Mount Juno, and it's one of the things that hasn't disappeared, whereas the glacier changes all the time. So I've been wanting to paint a number of different images, different seasons, different styles, and so I put it all together, and I'm really excited about it.
How many paintings do you have?
Well, there are about 20 altogether, and most of them are not really very large, but it encompasses most of the last few years.
Okay, so last 3 years?
Yeah, about 3 years.
Mm-hmm. So what do you do for each painting?
Well, sometimes I use photographs, but often I go out and paint outside, and this has been a wonderful year for painting outside.
Yes, it has
been. The best summer.
So you just, do you pick a specific day that you go out, or?
When it isn't raining.
And so you bring out your easel and...
Well, this year, someone bought at a garage sale bought me one of the French easels, the kind that you have legs, three legs, you go down and mm-hmm. one thing going up and the palette comes out and blah, blah, blah. But it's wood, and I wasn't used to it. So several times when I just set up, then the wind blew and the thing collapsed on me. So it took a while to get used to it.
Okay. And like you said, it's something that hasn't disappeared, but it has been your inspiration for the past 3 years.
Oh, yes, but I've lived here over 50 years,
right.
And I have a painting of it from 50 years ago, which I'll be showing along with it, and a photograph from Winter and Pond, as they thought years and years ago.
Oh, wow.
I can't remember the year, but I should.
Okay, so then we also have Dan Hobson here, and you'll also be at the Jack for First Friday.
Correct, yeah. I will be probably in the lobby. Sharon will be in the gallery there at the Jack.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a second CD release for me.
Okay. Yeah. And how did you decide what songs to put on it, on the second CD?
It's pretty much, as with my first CD, it's pretty much my favorite pieces that I play generally as dinner music at the Baranoff Gold Room. I've been doing that for about 7.5 years now. So over that time, I've kind of got a feel for the ones that people like the most and the ones that feel most comfortable to me. So it's 23 short pieces. There's a lot of pieces on the CD. They're all ones that people seem to like as dinner music.
And when was your first CD released?
Almost 2 years now. Yeah, it was November 2011.
Okay.
Yeah.
So how is playing, this might be a really silly question, your CD features classical guitar music.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. And how is that different than other forms of guitar music? I'm sure there's lots of differences, but what are like the basic differences?
It's pretty simple. It's basically just the instrument. Nylon strings. It's a softer, more mellow sound than steel strings on a guitar. If you want to get down to technicalities, it's how you hold the guitar. You hold it across the front of your body, and it's finger style. Fingernails are very important, and then the right hand fingernails for picking. So there's some differences that only a guitarist would appreciate, but the main one is just the nylon string sound.
Okay. And so you both will be at the Jack this Friday for First Friday.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You'll be in the gallery.
Yes.
And then you'll be?
Yeah, probably in the lobby there. Yeah.
Okay, and you'll actually be playing music?
Oh, I don't know. I'll have the guitar there. I think we'll have the CD on the soundtrack.
Right?
We'll see how noisy and busy it gets,
yeah.
You know. First Fridays are kind of fun there. Yeah.
I need to mention that I'm donating the proceeds from the show to the building project, the Willoughby Arts Building
yes.
project. Primarily because this is kind of an accumulation of a number of ideas, and I don't really need 20 paintings of Mount Juno. So I thought, well, here's an opportunity. Actually, it sort of was inspired by Jean Rogers' memorial, where she gave her the people who were donating to her memorial to the Jack, and I thought, that's a great thing to do.
That's great. It must be hard, I imagine, to work so hard on a body of work and then to see it go.
Yeah, sometimes it's very painful, like giving away your children, maybe. I don't know. Sometimes it is. But once in a while I run into something and I will say, wow, that looks familiar, and it's something I did maybe 30 years ago, and you know, it comes back, and it's kind of interesting, and people will tell me, well, I have one you did, but it was back in 68 or something. So it's you just have to keep working and working, and I'm always happy when someone wants to buy one. That way they like it almost as much as I do.
That's so, it must be a bittersweet thing, because on one hand you're saying goodbye, but on the other hand you're happy that someone wants to buy it as well.
Right.
Okay, so what are the details for First Friday? When does it start at the GAC?
It's 4:30 to, I think, 7:30, something like that.
Okay.
But there's a lot of different First Fridays going on simultaneously.
Yes. This is just one of them. Sharon Lobaugh will be there with her Mount Juno paintings.
Mm-hmm.
And Dan Hobson will be there with his guitar, hopefully playing music from his new CD, Watercolor. And we're actually going to listen to one track right now. Can you tell us a little about it, Dan?
Well, that particular piece is called Berceuse à Jussara, a lullaby for Jussara. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. Brazilian. It was written for the composer's niece, Jussara, and it's just a sweet little piece. Has some lovely harmonics in it, if you know guitar playing. It's just a nice one. That I originally heard it on Pandora, and I says, I got to learn that piece.
Oh,
I was sitting there late one night, and I said, well, I got to learn that piece. So I did. That's where it came from.
Well, thank you, artist Sharon Lobaugh, guitarist Dan Hobson, and they'll be featured at this Friday, First Friday, at the Jack. Here's a piece by Dan Hobson.
Writer's Almanac for Tuesday. It's the 3rd of September, 2013. The Treaty of Paris was signed on this day in 1783, in Paris, of course, which officially ended the War of Independence in the United States, the war which had begun at Lexington and Concord in the spring of 1775. The treaty required Great Britain to recognize the independence of the United States and to cede all lands east of the Mississippi. It's the birthday of Louis Sullivan, born Boston, 1856, architect who worked in Chicago in the 1880s and the 90s. He designed more than 100 buildings there, including the early steel frame skyscrapers, great innovations in their day, with experimental skeleton construction on the inside and intricate ornamentation on the outside. Louis Sullivan, remembered for his famous saying, "Form follows function." It's the birthday of the novelist Alison Lurie, born Chicago, 1926, whose novels include Imaginary Friends, The War Between the Tates, and Foreign Affairs, whose protagonists often are academics negotiating the perils and pitfalls of their personal relationships. And it's the birthday of Matthew Bolton, born in Birmingham, England, 1725. Bolton was a manufacturer. He came from a steel manufacturing family. They manufactured corkscrews and watch chains and hooks and buckles. Bolton invented a technique to make buckles inlaid with enamel, made them in Birmingham, exported them to France, and then imported them back to England so he could advertise them as the latest in French fashion. We know him because he was the business partner of James Watt, who invented a very much improved steam engine, which revolutionized manufacturing. James Watt was the engineer, the brains, and Matthew Bolton was the businessman. He ran his steel plant on hydropower, and he was looking for a better source of power. And so he invested in James Watt, who gave him a more efficient steam engine than what existed on the market at the time. Watt refined the steam engine to contain a separate condenser so that the steel steam cylinder remained hot all the time, did not have to keep cooling off, and so didn't keep losing energy. And Matthew Bolton supplied the capital. Matthew Bolton, who said, "I sell here, sir, what all the world desires to have, power." Here's a poem for today by Robert S. Foote, An Interruption. A boy had stopped his car to save a turtle in the road. I was not far behind, and slowed and stopped to watch as he began to shoo it off into the undergrowth. This wild reminder of an ancient past, lumbering to some late Triassic bog, till it was just a rustle in the grass, till it was gone. I hope I told him with a look as I passed by, how I was glad he'd stopped me there, and what I felt for both of them, something I took to be a kind of love, and of a troubled thought I had for man, of how we ought to let life go on where and when it can. A poem, An Interruption, Robert S. Foote, used by permission of the poet here on the Writer's Almanac. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Writer's Almanac on a Juno afternoon. You're listening to on KTOO. I'm your host, Lisa Foon. Right now, we have Gastineau Elementary Principal Brenda Edwards and Instructional Support Teacher Amy Ballard in the studio. Welcome, Brenda and Amy.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So why are you guys here today?
Well, we'd like to take the opportunity whenever we can to give the public some information about the instructional aspects of our school, especially when it comes to student success and positive things that we're doing at our school.
Okay. So we're going to, you guys want to talk about the role of instructional support teachers in increasing student success. How many instructional support teachers do you have at Gaston Elementary?
There's one instructional support teacher, which is myself, and it's a new position this year at Gaston Elementary provided through Title I funding.
Okay. And so what is your role in the school?
As an instructional support teacher, I support kindergarten through fifth grade students in reading. I pull small group instruction first grade through fifth grade with reading support outside of their whole class reading instruction. And then in kindergarten, I'm supporting the teacher in the classroom. In addition to that, with reading and literacy. In addition to that, I'm also teaching a small third grade math group to help support the classroom teachers in reducing classroom sizes during math instruction.
Okay, so you're handling it from kindergarten through fifth grade.
That's right.
A lot. So your schedule must be pretty busy.
It's pretty packed. 5 days a week, 30-minute intervention blocks.
Wow. How do you identify which students need the extra support?
Well, one change that we have at Gaston this year is that we're implementing DIBELS, which is a reading assessment. And there's a new state regulation that you have to implement a progress monitoring tool, K-2, and some of third grade. At Gaston, we've decided to implement this assessment, K-5. So that's one way that we identify students that will need some additional support on top of what they're getting in their classroom. So that's the baseline of where we get our information, as well as other assessment tools that we use at the school.
Okay, so these are students that have already been identified from tests last year, or?
No, we just got done conducting DIBELS with the entire school.
Okay. And how big are your groups that you're working with, Amy?
They're small groups, approximately about 8 students, and they're flexible groups, which means that as students are identified and I support them through intervention, then as their reading levels increase or the skills, specific skills that they're working on increases, I monitor their progress throughout the time they're working with me. And as they reach a level that's appropriate for them to be leaving intervention, then we move in students who maybe need more support. So as the year goes on and students are reading at different levels or working on different skills, they're identified through assessments and those groups move in and out depending on the student's needs.
Okay, so they get pulled out while the rest of the class is
working on other literacy skill development in the classroom, but it's outside of the main reading instruction time, so they're not missing any of their main literacy instruction.
Okay, and how will you judge the success or the increase of success of these students?
Through DIBELS, what Brenda was speaking of, there's a benchmark assessment, and the benchmark assessment is given at the beginning of the year, in the winter, and in the fall. And then in addition to that, there's progress monitoring tools that we use to see if the instruction is meeting their needs throughout that time period, those 3 months in between. There's other assessments that the school district uses, like MAP testing. We also use a core phonics survey, and we have a DRA, which is another reading assessment. So using some different assessment tools depending on the needs of the students.
Okay, so this is the first time that Gaston Elementary is having an instructional support teacher?
Gaston has received Title I funding in the past, and they have had an instructional support teacher. It's been a few years, so based on our free and reduced lunch counts, we were eligible to receive Title I funding again this year.
Okay. And so far, how are the students enjoying it?
The small group instruction has just begun this week as it's the beginning of the third week. So we've just started some push-in model right now with kindergarten, and we're still working on assessments to decide the students who are going to need intervention support now. So we haven't started the pull-out model yet, but it should be starting within the week or hopefully for sure beginning next week.
Okay, so it's just been the completion of what students need this.
Right, and that's the nice thing about DIBELS and using a school-wide assessment is that we can take a look at kids from kindergarten through fifth grade with, you know, a similar measure and, you know, really identify the students that need specific skills. I mean, that's what Amy will work on is specific skills. So that way, like she said, we're not taking them away from their regular instruction. It's they're getting an add-on to or an extra in order for them to, you know, be able to meet grade level expectations.
Is DIBLES like the name, or is it an acronym? Or
it's an acronym.
Okay. Can you tell me what that stands for again?
It's...
You're putting it
don't,
on the spot.
Don't quote me, because I could say this wrong, but it's... I think it's dynamic...
You stumped us.
Yeah.
Come
okay,
on.
No, it's okay.
You
should
have known.
Basic literacy skills is the last three letters.
Okay. So focusing most on reading, but you're also, did you mention math as well?
But it's mostly focused on reading, but with our third grade class classes, the third grade group of students, I should say, is the largest group of students in the building. And so to help reduce those class sizes, I'm also teaching a third grade math group, a small third grade math group.
Okay. And how are you hoping, Brenda, that this will help overall with not just like tests, but critical thinking, creative thought, those sorts of things?
Right. That's the nice thing about having the instructional support teacher is that, like we said, she's not pulling the students or working with the students during their regular instructional literacy instructional time in the classroom. So it really is an add-on and it's an extra. So, you know, like we mentioned before, it's working on specific skills. So there might be something, you know, a younger student might not completely have a grasp on short vowel sounds. So what Amy can do is she can work on that specific skill with a small group of kids. So then when they work in their regular classroom environment, they're able to function, you know, with the rest of their peers. You know, there are all kinds of reasons why, you know, kids could be missing different skills. So our job is to fill in those gaps, so they're able to achieve better when they're in their classroom.
And in addition to that, as your skills are increasing, your confidence as a reader increases, and as your confidence increases in the classroom, you feel, or most times many students feel, more able to do more things in the room and feel more confident as a learner.
Oh, that's great.
And we're also able to have more school-wide discussions on literacy because we have this common measure that we're using, and so we can have discussions with the kindergarten teachers, can have discussions with the first grade teachers to make sure that you know, they're meeting all their students' needs, but also preparing them for the next grade. So
right.
it's a school-wide model or a school-wide assessment that really enables us to have conversations with more than your particular grade level.
Okay. Amy, what sort of background or education have you had to make you an instructional support teacher?
I have my bachelor's of elementary education, and I've taught fourth grade, kindergarten, and second grade. I was a second grade teacher last year at Gastineau. Mm-hmm. I'm also in the process of getting my graduate certificate in ESL, mm-hmm. and so that also works towards working with students with in small group support.
Okay, and I've taught a very small amount, and I respect that job very much because I realize how challenging it is. But I always enjoyed working with smaller groups. There are benefits to it. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, I'm really excited. Like I said, we haven't. I've been teaching my math group and pushed in with kindergarten, but I haven't had the chance yet to be working with all of the grade levels besides doing assessments. So I'm really excited to see the difference having been a classroom teacher and done small groups in the classroom for reading instruction, but how it looks different in an environment where it is a smaller group and mm-hmm. you're not managing the rest of the class, so you can really give that undivided attention on specific skills to specific students to help them raise their reading abilities and be able to be more confident readers in the classroom.
Right. And as teachers, you know, our biggest joy is seeing achievement,
mm-hmm.
you know, seeing student achievement, seeing students become more confident and, you know, able to participate in anything that they want to participate in. And the ability for students to be able to work in a small group, you know, you're able to get so much more work done because you can just target specific skills. So we're really excited.
And I imagine the other teachers, the main classroom teachers, are really excited as well because, you know, there's only so many hours in the day to teach. And you know that there's always the students who aren't quite getting it. So to have you, Amy, as another tool that they can use, I'm sure they're just ecstatic.
And it's great to be at a school like Gastineau because it's such a supportive staff and we work together and have meeting times allotted for teachers to get together and collaborate. So it's great to be able to be in an environment in this position where I am working with all of the other classroom teachers.
We do have a very dynamic group of teachers. What I tell people is that we've got a school full of doers.
Oh, yeah.
And they're doing good for students. You know, a lot of very student-driven teachers. So this position is just adding to, you know, the ability for us to get a lot of student achievement done in a shorter amount of time because they'll be getting those targeted skills that they need.
Okay. What are some reading, these targeted skills in reading that students might be lacking?
Well, the big five in reading is phonemic awareness, which is hearing the sounds in words, phonics, vocabulary, comprehension, and fluency. And many times when a student, not all the times, but many times when a student is struggling in specific skills, it's often in a phonics and phonemic awareness area. And so my groups will, depending on the assessment results, will focus in those two areas. And then in addition, comprehension is the overall goal is reading comprehension, to be able to read for meaning. And so by increasing these skills, you increase your reading fluency, which therefore leads to increasing reading comprehension.
Are there any things that parents can do at home, even if their students won't be seeing you, Amy? Like, what can parents do to help their students with reading skills?
I think there are a lot of things that you can do, but the easiest one is to, you know, when students are young, is to read to them. If they can't read, read to them. And then when students do learn how to read, encourage them to read things that they can read and understand. And then if they can't, you know, a lot of times students are really interested in things that they might not be able to quite read themselves. So you just sit down and you read with them. But the biggest thing is to practice. Reading is a skill that you have to practice. And that's, you know, we hear it all the time that you should read to your kids. But it really is true. You know, spending the time sitting down with your students and reading or having them read to you.
Yeah, that was some of my favorite memories with my mom was having her read to me, and I can't wait to do that with the kids I one day have. So hopefully, encourage all parents. I'm sure a lot of parents are already doing this, but you know, whether your students need Amy in these instructional classes, it's such a great idea to always be reading to them.
Yeah, the other thing that parents can do is to ask their student's teacher, you know, what are they struggling in? How can I help at home? Teachers have amazing ideas, you know, that they, like you said, there's only so much time during the day to spend with their classroom teacher, but teachers have wonderful ideas on how you can engage specific skills and specific students because they know them as well. So you can ask your student's teacher how you can help at home.
Great. Well, thank you both so much for coming in today and talking.
Thanks for having us.
Amy, good luck with this coming year. It sounds like you're going to be doing some really good, important work.
Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. We're going to listen to another track off of Watercolor, Dan Hobson's second CD. To a Juno afternoon on KTOO. Tomorrow for Wednesday, Lori Scanlon will be hosting. We'll talk with Patricia Hull about Holy Trinity Church's spectacular happening this Sunday. Divas Leslie Wood and Mary Graham will be here to preview Saturday's Who's Your Diva event, which we heard a little bit about today. We'll discuss Rosh Hashanah with Rabbi Jessica Zimmerman. Sunny Blackwell will be here to highlight the upcoming March of Dimes Jail and Bail event. That, Writer's Almanac, music, and more, all on tomorrow, Juno's afternoon. KTOO Juneau. That's what you're listening to. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. KTOO also broadcasts on these translators in the Valley and Auk Bay area, tuned to K276 AF 103.1. In Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, K269 AO at 101.7. Gustavus listens on K201 AM 88.1. KT220BT serves Hoonah at 91.9. An Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait here, KTOO on K210 AS 89.9. In Juneau, you can also receive KTOO on GCI Cable Juneau on digital channel 8871. KRNN can be heard at digital channel 872, and KXLL can be found at 873. We're also online at www.ktoo.org. You're listening to a Juneau Afternoon. Stay tuned for All Things Considered.
I'm going to support the president's call for action. I believe my colleagues should support this call for action.
House Speaker John Boehner among key congressional leaders lining up behind military strikes on Syria.
It's Tuesday, September 3rd, and this is All Things Considered.
I'm Alyssa Block.
And I'm Robert Siegel. President Obama wants Congress to approve military action against Syria, and today he got some important bipartisan support.
Also this hour, the Syrian refugee crisis. More than 2 million Syrians have fled. Half of them are children.
There's some children who, because of the shelling, because of the violence, they left with nothing. They left just with their pajamas or with their teddies.
And if you think the wealthy are more generous when it comes to charitable giving, think again.
In just about every way you could study it, our lower class individuals volunteer more, they give more of their...